So once again, guys, Sonny and Hogan, we can talk about yet another indictment. As anyone surprised?
It's like a recurring theme.
No. Well, I mean, there was big news that came out about Hunter and Joe yesterday. So right. You would expect the next day to try and wipe that off the pages to have a big story about Trump. That's typically the cadence of this little song and dance we participate in every single day.
So. Yeah, that's exactly right. So Sonny Joy Nelson and Hogan Gidley here with us again. And I'm Tim Murtaugh, and this is the Line Drive Podcast. We are joined today by a very special guest, Miranda Devine of the New York Post and author of the blockbuster runaway bestseller, The Laptop from Hell. Miranda, it is an honor to have you with us. Thank you for joining us on the live Line Drive podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
What? Let me start off. Trump indicted today for the third time in the third jurisdiction. This time by Jack Smith, the U.S. attorney, and this is all regarding the events surrounding January 6th. What do you make of this? What do you think?
Well, it's so obvious that it's just such a political prosecution. You look at the indictment, it seems to be, every lawyer that I've heard that has gone through the indictment says the same thing that seems obvious even to a non-lawyer, which is that this is about demonizing speech, demonizing Donald Trump's honest belief that the election was stolen, and demonizing and saying it's illegal for lawyers to give him advice that he then heeds. It's incredible. I mean, it's as if they, you know, Jack Smith thinks he's a mind reader. I mean, you know, President Trump, I remember I had an interview with him in May of 2021 in Trump Tower for The Laptop from Hell. And, you know, his favorite topic was always about the election. And even though it had nothing to do with what I was asking about, he brings it up. And I said, well, I see it as, you know, you played a game, like a football game, and the umpire was unfair and, you know, maybe the game was rigged and it was, you know, and you should have won, but it's too late. The game's over. You can't change it. So just play the next game to win. And he says, no, I don't agree with that. I think it's like Tiffany's. They stole the diamonds and we have to get them back. And that's how he genuinely felt. And so he felt that in 2021. He felt that, you know, after the election. I'm sure he still feels that. And they're trying to say that, no, he was just pretending. He didn't really believe that. How on earth are they going to prove that in a court?
Absolutely. You know, I was just thinking, how do you think that all these crimes that President Trump is accused of right now, how do they compare with the crimes of the Biden family?
That's a great question. I mean, that's the great irony, is that this indictment comes out just a day after Hunter Biden's former best friend, Devin Archer, has testified to the House Oversight Committee and said that, you know, Joe Biden was the product that was being sold. He didn't say it, but he demonstrated it by saying that Hunter Biden used to get his father on the speakerphone when they were meeting with overseas, you know, business associates, benefactors, potential clients. And there was one time in Paris, one time in Dubai. As far as he witnessed, there were 20 of those times. There were two dinners that he attended that Joe Biden was invited along by Hunter Biden to meet his overseas business partners from Ukraine and Russia and Kazakhstan in Cafe Milano in Georgetown when he was vice president. This is all when he was the second most powerful man in America. And in fact, in these countries, in Ukraine and China and Russia, he was the most powerful man because he'd been deputized by President Obama to be the point man in those countries. And he came with billions of dollars of American aid that those countries desperately needed. And particularly we saw that in Ukraine when he threatened to withhold $1 billion worth of aid unless the prosecutor, who was investigating the company that was paying his son $1 million a year unless that prosecutor was fired. And that prosecutor was investigating very aggressively that company, Burisma, at the time, because shortly before he was fired, the prosecutor had seized all the property belonging to the owner of Burisma, Hunter's mate, who was paying him all that money, had seized all his property in Kiev. I think it was four houses and two blocks of land and a Rolls Royce. So it was a serious investigation, and Joe Biden intervened. And, you know, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, because although Joe Biden and his cronies in the media and in the Soros sort of NGO world claimed that actually Shokin needed to be fired because he was corrupt and he wasn't investigating Burisma aggressively enough, the truth is the opposite. And you can see that in the fact that Burisma, after Viktor Shokin was fired, his successors in the prosecutor general's office did nothing with Burisma. They dropped everything. They dropped the investigation. And Zlochevsky and his company got off with a slap on the wrist. Job well done, Hunter Biden and Joe Biden.
Miranda, again, great timeline, very interesting stuff. And you guys have done some incredible work over at the Post, just kind of exposing a lot of what so many in the mainstream media refuse to talk about. I do find it funny you mentioned that in this case with Donald Trump, for example, as I bounce back there for just a second, it's always like people say, I wish he would just listen to his lawyers, and he listens to his lawyers and they indict him for it. It's kind of stupid.
100%. Yeah.
But, look, I've been to Cafe Milano a bunch of times.
Right.
I've never talked about the weather when I was there.
Never.
Was that an illusion?
Yeah, it's an illusion, which is exactly where I'm going to go. It also reminded me of, remember Hillary Clinton's emails? They were all about yoga and grandchildren. It's like these conversations are all about the weather, right?
Yeah. Sure.
So one of the things that's fascinating to me is kind of the back and forth, the coincidences that continue to kind of befall this poor oppressed family, the Bidens. And I was at a network that shall not be named, but it did have a B, a C, and an N in a certain order earlier tonight. And I watched them just fawn over this indictment. Like, this is the smoking gun. This is the one that brings him down. Talking about Trump. And I just thought to myself, I'm living it all over again, because it was the most overused word in the Trump administration was the word bombshell. It was every day there was a bombshell.
Yeah.
But with the Hunter Biden stuff and the Joe Biden stuff, it seems like there are a bunch of many, not just bombshells, but pieces of evidence that are irrefutable. And so can you walk us through kind of the ping pong, the back and forth of Hunter meets with the mayor of Moscow. Then all of a sudden they get $3 million. They have the dinner with Ukraine and then they get the money. Kind of walk us through kind of the level of what the left would call coincidences in this that don't really amount to much.
Look, I think the James Comer and Jim Jordan and their committees have done a really good job in just 6 months, considering that they're not really geared up like the DOJ, like say Jack Smith is with all those killer prosecutors to actually investigate and compile a case. But they've actually done a good job and they've put it on the public record. And I think James Comer has done, gone through these suspicious activity reports and followed the money trail, and that's still incomplete but very important. And that jibes with what the IRS whistleblowers told us about the $17.5 million that they had discovered that came from China, Romania, and Ukraine to Biden family and associate coffers. And of that, I think, half of that went to Hunter Biden himself. And so they've done that, but it's I see it, and I saw this when I was writing a book from the laptop and from talking to various of Hunter Biden's former business partners. What I saw was it's like a jigsaw puzzle. And so every little piece fits together and you can see the outline of the final corruption, but there are pieces that have been deliberately hidden. And so at this stage, it's quite difficult to dig them up. And I know that there are other of Hunter Biden's former business partners, including a guy called Eric Schwerin, who was very important because he used to do Hunter's taxes. He also helped Joe Biden with his financial arrangements. He also seemed to operate a joint bank account they had. So he knew where all the, or knows where all the bodies are buried. He's resisting coming to speak to the Oversight Committee, so they'll have to go heavy on him. And so eventually these jigsaw pieces are going to fall into place and the American people are going to be able to see very clearly what this is. And what I think it is an influence peddling operation that Joe Biden has been running since his earliest days in Delaware as a senator for almost 40 years. And it was small fry then, you know, it's a peculiar state. He's a powerful man in that state. It's peculiar because all these corporations go to Delaware and they have their, they're incorporated there because it has very opaque sort of tax laws and transparency. It's like the Liechtenstein of America. And so that put him in a powerful position where these companies, these wealthy companies wanted to shower him with gifts and donations in return for favors as he climbed the ladder in the Senate and took on powerful roles as chairman of the Judiciary Committee and chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee. And so he had this, and his family, his extended family, had this sort of red carpet ride. Anything they wanted, they got. And anything in Delaware that they did wrong was covered up. You know, I know there's law enforcement in Delaware that are really bitter about the Bidens because they feel that they're, you know, all the cousins and the in-laws and the grandchildren and so on, they have car crashes and drunk driving and drug offenses, and they always get off. And so there is just a feeling that Delaware is just Biden world. And he rules the roost there. And he's never really had to pay for anything. His houses have been sort of given to him cheaply from donors accidentally. You know, he just lucks into these amazing real estate deals. His son, Hunter, who was designated as the bag man for the family, he gets into Yale even though he really didn't qualify. He then graduates and gets all these grace and favor jobs through Joe Biden's donors at inflated salaries, which allow him to pay off not just his own college loans, but his brother's college loans, which of course is all assistance to Joe Biden, because unlike other middle-class families who have to scrimp and save to pay for expensive college or other, you know, houses, mortgages, whatever the normal costs of running a family are, Joe Biden didn't have to do any of that because it was pretty much all expenses paid. And that when he became vice president, he just internationalized that grift. And I think that he's been doing it for so long, he maybe genuinely didn't think there was anything wrong with it, because you're talking about money that's, it's not that huge for selling out the country. You know, the IRS guys say 17 and a half million. I see like 20, 25 million. Maybe there's more. That's what the Oversight Committee will discover. But it's not, you know, really enough money to justify selling out your country. And that's what it looks like Joe Biden did. And that's why it's really important. This is not just a tit for tat. You know, they've gone and indicted Trump over these political charges. Right. It's not. It's actually crucial to the national security of this country to know just how compromised the president is because of the millions of dollars that his family took in selling access to him. And, you know, the most obvious quid pro quo is Ukraine, the firing of that prosecutor that Joe Biden demanded. But the irony is, I was just thinking this earlier tonight, is that, you know, in that first impeachment of Donald Trump over Ukraine, Donald Trump was punished for trying to investigate and call out Joe Biden's wrongdoing in Ukraine, right? So he didn't commit the sins, Joe Biden did, but he gets impeached for them. And then again, here you have Donald Trump again being punished for trying to investigate and call out the wrongdoing of the Democrats in their funny business that they did with the election. And, you know, I didn't really go along with the theories that Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani and the rest of his crowd had about 2020. But I do think that, you know, there was so much wrongdoing under cover of COVID where they went maybe legally and changed election laws in various important states. The censorship of our Laptop from Hell stories before the election were crucial as well. I mean, they rigged things every which way, probably a dozen different ways. And considering the election was won, I think it was, 45,000 votes in a handful of battleground states?
Across 42,000
something,
Well, there. So you don't need much. They threw everything at it, whether it was drop boxes, whether it was censorship, whether it was, you know, COVID rule changes. Molly Hemingway had a great book where she described all the different, you know, the Zuckerbucks, so on. There were many ways that the Democrats manipulated the outcome. And so therefore, you know, maybe Donald Trump went at it in a clumsy way. He certainly didn't have enough time, but he's being punished for the same thing that he was punished for in the impeachment, calling out the Democrats.
Let me, Miranda, as somebody who's at the New York Post and you've been covering every minute by minute development of the Hunter Biden story and your book, The Laptop from Hell, and Devin Archer, and it really every step of the way you've been all over this, and your publication as well. The New York Post, of course, was the one publication that broke the laptop story back in October of 2020. And it was extraordinarily frustrating. I was a communications director on the Trump campaign, and Hogan was
you're opening up scars.
We were furious
about this, Miranda.
Oh, I get wound up about this every time it comes up. We had for the last 2 weeks of the campaign, and Hogan was there and Sonny was there, and we had press conference calls every single day for the last 2 weeks. We had senators on, and Rand Paul and Ted Cruz, and we had Kevin McCarthy and leadership from the House as well, begging the reporters on these conference calls to cover the story, not because of Hunter, not because of his dumb nudie pictures or anything,
right,
but because of the implication that the president of the United States or the vice president and a guy who was running for president, Joe Biden, was for sale. Access to him was for sale. Mm. Everyone just blacked it out. You know, the social media cracked down on it and the general
and the CIA
conspiracy. Yes, the CIA with the
one CIA 50, guys.
Yes, yeah. The CIA guys, and then the letter from the former intelligence agencies, which gave the media an excuse not to write about it. Oh, it's Russian disinformation. That whole bit. They are all now being forced to cover this story. Now, again, it's almost 3 years too late.
Yes.
Because they should have covered it in October of 2020. And we have polling that shows that it made a difference that people didn't know about that it would have changed their votes in substantial numbers. It, as someone who works at the New York Post and having written a very successful book about this, which is, again, by the way, called The Laptop from Hell, buy it on Amazon. Doesn't it delight you that people are having to cover this story now that they should have covered 3 years ago? And by covering it now, they're having to admit that they were wrong all along.
Not really, because I don't see that. I honestly don't. I see, you know, Devin Archer being covered by the New York Times, and they bury right down the bottom of this long story, which is all written from the point of view of Dan Goldman, the Democrat, the new Adam Schiff, you know, talking about it's all illusions, and Joe Biden just talked about the weather and he just loves his son and he's had so much tragedy in his life, you know, just baloney, total excuses and gaslighting. And at the very bottom of their story, they write, oh, well, it's been well known for a long time that Joe Biden has had interactions with his son's business partners. That is such a lie, because Joe Biden has denied now for almost 3 years that he knew anything about his son Hunter's overseas business dealings. He never spoke to anyone to do with Hunter or Jim Biden's business. And nobody in his family got any money from China. That's a lie, he said on the debate stage against Donald Trump. And only in the last week, the White House has now slightly altered, like completely altered their wording. And they now say, look, you know, the president's not in business with his son, which is no one's ever even suggested that. You know, so they've gone from he doesn't know anything about it to he's not in business with him. It's just ridiculous, and they get away with it. And so I don't see that they ever concede the wrongdoing. I mean, they got Pulitzer Prizes for the Russia collusion hoax that they haven't given back. They've never issued corrections. The Pulitzer Board has never demanded that they give them back or issued a correction. So they're not going to concede defeat here. And, you know, I share with you, I was contacted by Bob Costello, who was Rudy Giuliani. You probably know more about this than I do, but who was Rudy Giuliani's lawyer. This was, you know, in October of 2020. And I was like the last resort, because I think they'd been trying to get people in the media to run this laptop story. And, you know, and Rudy Giuliani said to Bob before they were just about to try and give it to the Daily Mail, he said, I'll try Miranda. And so it was only because I have a very good relationship with my then former editor-in-chief, who was an Australian and my old editor, and we trust each other. And he's just a gung-ho Col Allen, just a gung-ho newspaper guy who knows a good story when he sees it, that he just went in hell for leather. And we sent teams out to Delaware and, you know, got the subpoena that John Paul MacIsaac in Delaware had and so on. And we managed to turn that story around when everyone else in the media had been petrified. And, you know, we had fantastic reporters on it and they did brilliant work. And we had editors who were courageous. And then it just fell in a heap. You know, it was a true story. Everything we wrote was accurate and real. And you know that probably better than anyone. And yet, because big tech, within a couple of hours, this is Facebook first and then Twitter, censored the story, they sent a message to other media that there was something really wrong with this story and they knew something about it. So from Twitter, they said it was hacked materials, nothing hacked about it. And from Facebook, they said they were throttling it, basically pending a fact check, which never happened. Because I know it couldn't have happened, because to fact check, they would have had to call certain people, and they never called those people because I was talking to them from the start, people like Tony Bobulinski, who were on the other end of emails. They never contacted them. So there was no fact check. And then we find out from the Missouri versus Biden free speech case, amazing case, from the Twitter files and from the Republican investigations, what do we find out? That Twitter and Facebook, well, we know Twitter, but and we can assume the same thing happened in Facebook, but we know Twitter had embedded in it these CIA intelligence community, you know, former, supposedly, operatives, and they were meeting, Twitter executives were meeting weekly before the election with the FBI, and the FBI seeded, and we know this from Yoel Roth, who was the former chief censor of Twitter, who had to give a sort of sworn statement in a separate court case. And in his sworn statement, which was dug up in the Missouri versus Biden case and sort of not noticed at the time, he said that he was told in these FBI meetings to be prepared for a hack and leak operation by Russia. And it would occur likely in October and likely be about Hunter Biden. So there you go. That was our story. They pre-bunked our story before we'd even published. The FBI had, so that's why Facebook and Twitter, the morning, like within a couple of hours of our story going live, they had a little bit of to and fro discussion about whether they should do it, because you see in the Twitter files that they were saying, well, the New York Post really hasn't broken any of our rules.
Right. Not everybody was convinced that to take it down.
No. But James Baker, the former FBI general counsel who had been up to his neck in the Russia collusion hoax, he had just, I think, 8 months before the 2020 election had been parachuted into Twitter as their deputy chief counsel. There was a similar arrangement that went on at Facebook. we don't have as much visibility into Facebook because Zuckerberg hasn't done what Elon Musk did and opened the files. But so he was parachuted in. And in fact, when Elon Musk opened the books, and he invited various, he sadly didn't invite me or anyone from the New York Post, but he invited some independent sort of left-leaning journalists to come and have a look, like Matt Taibbi, who are very good, Michael Schellenberger. And they found that, in fact, it was Barry Weiss who figured it out. They found that this former FBI general counsel was running interference and making sure that they didn't get close to the actual FBI interference that was going on. And when Elon Musk found out what James Baker was doing, he fired him. But in the meantime, the damage was done. And you can see in the Twitter files afterwards that on that day, when they were October 14, 2020, when they had a very truncated debate about whether or not to censor us, James Baker was, you know, advising that it probably a good idea to do it. And so, you know, the fix was in. And the other thing we need to understand about the FBI is that they had been spying on Rudy Giuliani for a couple of years, ever since he became Donald Trump's personal attorney. A few months after that, a secret warrant went out for his iCloud. So they were had access to all his emails and his iMessages. And they would have seen, if they'd been looking, they certainly had access to it. In August of 2020, the email that came in from the laptop repair shop guy in Delaware, John Paul MacIsaac, saying, look, you know, I got this this laptop and it belongs to Hunter Biden and he abandoned it and I legally own it. And this was over a year ago. It was April of 2019 that he abandoned it. And John Paul MacIsaac had looked through it and had become disturbed by not the porn and the nudity and the sort of degradation that's on it, but actually by a lot of the Ukraine material that was on it, the documents, the amount of money, the invoices, the emails. And he recognized, because he was a Trump supporter, which is, you know, it's not a crime yet, he recognized the name Burisma because the impeachment inquiry had was starting to hot up, and that name was in the news in Ukraine. And he went to the FBI and asked them to take a look at this, and they sort of ignored him, fobbed him off. But in December of 2019, they came and took the laptop away and a hard drive, but he kept a copy for himself. And when he realized that the FBI wasn't making any of this material available to head off this, what he could see was a completely wrong impeachment that was impeaching Donald Trump when the person who was, you know, from the laptop was committing the wrongdoing was actually the Bidens. So then he went desperately trying to contact some Republican members of Congress, couldn't get through. And finally he saw Rudy Giuliani on television and tried to contact him and got through. And so he sent this email, and it's very detailed, very forensic, lays out what he sees as the crimes in the laptop. And it actually, if you look at it now, it really stands the test of time. And so the FBI would have had access to that. They already had the laptop, so they would have thought, uh-oh, this thing might blow. And there were a lot of people at the FBI who would have been worried about that because they'd covered it up. They would cover it up a lot. We're seeing more and more how much they covered up. And so there's Rudy Giuliani, and they're investigating him, the Southern District of New York, for FARA violations, ironically enough, and they're spying on him. So they saw, they would have seen, had access to anyway, if they were watching, paying attention, doing their jobs, they would have seen that email. And then they would have seen my messages with Rudy Giuliani that were not many and very brief, but enough to let them know that the New York Post was going to publish. You know, I was like, hold off, don't give it to anyone else. We're doing it, right? So they were forewarned, and that makes it even more sinister that they went to Twitter and we believe Facebook and pre-bunked our story so that it was instantly killed. And, you know, that cost us a lot of money, and it blocked a lot of traffic. And you hear you know, people on the left say, oh, the New York Post, they still had it on their website. They still had it, you know, in the newspaper. The reach was curtailed significantly. I mean, that was a story, a bombshell story, would have gone around the world, would have gone across the country in the normal course of events. If that was a story about Donald Trump, every American would have known about it, would have been 24/7 on every news channel, including Fox News, including the New York Post. Because we, it's, you know, I don't actually care who it was. You know, if that was a laptop with wrongdoing showing Donald Trump and Donald Trump Jr., it still would have been a great story. But the other side, the New York Times and Washington Post, are just so political.
You know, Miranda, when I was a journalist years ago, back in the early late 90s, early 2000s, and it's so frustrating to me to watch kind of how far the profession has fallen here. You talked about having this incredible story, the 51 intelligence agents that wrote the letter, obviously saying whatever it said. It dawned on me, okay, either one, these intelligence agents either have no ability whatsoever to spot real Russian disinformation, or they know what Russian disinformation is and just lied about it. Either way, it makes them look pretty stupid and it's completely inept. But you hit on a media piece here that I think is important. So I was always so infuriated in the White House because I had so many calls from people who had stone cold sources from inside the CIA or the FBI, person familiar with, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. We know all the monikers. And no one could be bothered to call anyone at these agencies about the laptop story. Like, it's because they didn't want to know because they didn't care. And when you fast forward to today and you've got 20 phone calls with Hunter and Joe, you have 21 shell companies, $17+ million, maybe more than 170 suspicious activity reports, the WhatsApp message, the text message to his daughter, all these things are kind of piling up and the Democrats aren't picking apart the evidence because they know it's real. They're not going after Bobulinski necessarily or Devin Archer because they know they're credible. None of the whistleblowers either. I'm confused as to what it's going to take for the media to begin to cover this in a responsible way. And I pulled some numbers before you came on. CNN, MSNBC yesterday from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. mentioned Trump 759 times and mentioned Devin Archer and Hunter 48 times. In the month from June 8th to July 18th, so more than a month, ABC, NBC, CBS, 527 minutes on Donald Trump and his legal problems, zero on Hunter Biden and bribery. What is it going to take for them to go, hey, this is news?
Look, I mean, you make a really good point. I don't know, and I think that's part of the problem and the dysfunction and the division in the country is that you've got, you know, half of America having a completely different sense of reality from the other half of America. And, you know, I think conservatives are much more, I don't think this is self-serving to say this, but because in the culture we're in the minority and we are forced to consume, you know, the left-wing viewpoint, it's impossible to avoid. So we get both sides. And I think that gives us a greater grasp on reality, whereas it's much easier if you are a leftist in New York to silo yourself and you just read the New York Times and maybe watch MSNBC and you congratulate yourself that everybody you know all thinks the same and that people who vote for Donald Trump or even vote Republican are just Neanderthals and morons and rednecks and actually dangerous domestic terrorists and, you know, ultra MAGA semi-fascists, as Joe Biden calls them. So, you know, I think it's gone so far now, this alternate reality, and where, you know, I call them the prestige media. And really the New York Times does still set the agenda for every newsroom in the English-speaking world. And I'm, you know, I worked in Australia for a long time, and any international stories are all dictated by what the New York Times thinks, or the BBC, both equally left-wing. So,
hey, Miranda, just real quick, Joe Biden never acknowledged his grandchild until the New York Times wrote a story about it.
Well, exactly. That's a perfect example. You know, we've been writing about that for, God,
right,
years. And the kid's four, so we've been talking about it for 4 years. And
right. Was it Maureen Dowd who did it finally?
It was Maureen Dowd.
It was Katie.
Well, no.
Maureen Dowd wrote a column about 3 weeks ago.
Right.
It was Katie Foster or something. He just wrote a news story. But it was Maureen Dowd that twisted everything tipped everything because she's Joe Biden's favorite journalist because, you know, sure, they're both supposedly Irish and all of that blarney. And in fact, Hunter Biden's dummy spit during on that you can see on the laptop, just preceding his abandoning his laptop, which I've always thought was a bit of a Freudian kind of landmine for his father, who literally was within weeks, he knew, announcing his presidential bid. And it wasn't like the laptop repair shop guy didn't try many times to get Hunter to come and pick it up and pay his bill, his $85 bill. But it was Maureen Dowd who set Hunter Biden off on this absolute rage against his family because he believed, probably rightly, that a column that she'd written about, you know, poor Hunter is such a loser and he's such a drug addict and, you know, this is the burden that Joe Biden, the great family man, has to carry. And Hunter was furious because he's like, I've supported this family and, you know, I've paid for half of everything for all of you and you've used me and now you throw me under the bus and you disrespect me. He could not get over it. And so now Maureen Dowd has come out with, and she's such a coward, she couldn't actually do it in her own voice. It's obvious that Joe Biden, just ignoring the existence of his four-year-old seventh grandchild and rubbing it in by running around the place saying, oh, I love all my grandchildren, I'm such a great family man, I've got six grandkids, and Jill Biden hanging up six stockings for the grandchildren plus two for the dogs at Christmas time. Yeah, and, you know, just...
They bit people, by the way.
Yeah, I bet the little girl never bit a Secret Service agent.
That's right. Savage dogs says a lot about the owner if the dogs are out of control. But anyway, so it was only Maureen Dowd who, in a cowardly fashion, wrote the column, not in her own voice, but she quoted her sister saying some, you know, really sensible things about what can you say about a man who just abandons this poor little girl. And... It must have shown up in their polls as a negative because that story really hit the mark. And suddenly Joe Biden, in fact, yesterday acknowledged publicly that he had a seventh grandchild the very day that Devin Archer was testifying. And what was important in Joe Biden doing this, from he's on vacation in Rehoboth Beach, so no one can ask him any questions about Devin Archer's testimony, but in this podcast that was released the same day, some obscure host I've never heard of, but Joe Biden makes a point of saying, yes, well, my seven grandchildren, and then he says, and I talk to them, the ones who are old enough to talk on the phone, every single day. You know, I talk to my, on the phone, I always make a point of always talking to my family members every single day. Obviously, that's his attempt at pre-bunking Devin Archer's testimony, which was going to say that he knew, because we'd already written it in the New York Post, that Devin Archer was going to say that Hunter Biden put his father on the speakerphone regularly, up to two dozen times to speak to his overseas and introduced him to his overseas business partners. So obviously that worried Joe Biden. He knew it was a problem. And that was why he kind of pre-bunked it there.
Mm. Well, when you look at the difference of how Hunter Biden is treated compared to other people like rappers like Lil Wayne and ASAP Rocky, who were charged with the same types of crimes, the federal gun crime, the difference in standard that they are held to, what do you think that says to other countries around the world, to our enemies, to our allies? What do you think that says to them?
Look, I think it says the same thing that the indictment, well, it's going to be four indictments, isn't it, of Donald Trump, tells everybody that, you know, this is America's descended into this corrupt banana republic state where the president has his chief political rival arrested, where the president perverts the course of justice or gets his DOJ to go easy on his son, who has, you know, had 5 years investigation, and these two IRS whistleblowers who come out and say there were multiple tax felonies, there were, you know, potential FARA violations, and the statute of limitations was allowed to run out because of the stonewalling and the obstruction by the DOJ of their investigation. And, you know, these are not partisan people. They're the most skilled investigators, IRS investigators in the, in, you know, in the country. And they, the supervisor, Gary Shapley, represents America in international forums and has clawed back billions of dollars for the American taxpayer from tax cheats around the world. And the other whistleblower is actually a Democrat, and he without fear or favor, he is the best criminal investigator the IRS has. And he just went after this like he does any other case, and every step of the way they were blocked, and it was incredibly demoralizing for them, and they're still being retaliated against. And, you know, just basic things like they wanted to go and get a search warrant for a cottage on Joe Biden's estate in Greenville, Delaware, where Hunter Biden had been holed up. And they knew that there would be evidence there, documents there that would help them in their tax investigation. They weren't allowed to do that. They wanted to search a storage locker belonging to Hunter Biden in Virginia, where a lot of his business documents were. Again, someone in the prosecutor's office tipped off Hunter Biden's lawyer. And another time, you know, they had to back off doing any overt investigations, I think for more than 2 months before the 2020 election. And then after the election in December, they decided to start again, and they flew out to Malibu. This was Gary Shapley and an FBI investigator, and they were going to knock on Hunter Biden's door and interview him. And they got there, they're sitting in the car outside, and they get told, oh, actually, the FBI, someone up top at the FBI has tipped off not only Hunter Biden's lawyers, but also the Biden transition team has tipped them off. And so, of course, they never got an interview with Hunter Biden. The entire case was just sabotage from the beginning. And then you saw that fake plea deal that fell apart the other day in Delaware, and the fix was in. But obviously the judge, thank goodness, just couldn't really wrap her head around it and couldn't understand why the prosecutors were going along with it. And so she called it out. Maybe, you know, only momentarily, but it did shine the spotlight on just how corrupt and nefarious this whole affair is.
To me, this is exactly what impeachment was made for. It's why it exists as a process in the Constitution. Miranda, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, we could sit here and talk about this for hours and hours and hours, but I'm afraid.
I'm a huge fan.
Oh, thank you.
It makes me so angry, all of it. And also at the same time, it's like empty rage because nothing could ever repair, I think, what the damage they did and how they, that's direct campaign or election interference is what went on in 2020 from a variety of angles. And it's so maddening, and there's just nothing we can do about it retroactively. It drives
and now they're doing it again.
And now they're doing it. Yep. And you know, this was another thing that drives me crazy. Given the same set of circumstances or even different circumstances, the media would do exactly what it did back in 2020 all over again because they put on the jersey for the team. They don't love Joe Biden specifically. It's because of what he represents, and he's a Democrat. He's a liberal like them, and they would do it all over again. So thank you. Thank you so much for your time. I know you're very busy, and you stay very busy covering all this for the New York Post. And also want to congratulate you on the success of your book. Everyone should go buy it. The Laptop from Hell, available still on Amazon, right?
Yes.
Yes. And so for Sonny Joy Nelson and for Hogan Gidley, thank you, Miranda Devine. This has been The Line Drive Podcast.